kiddo. I'm Bruce Williams. This is live from Tampa, Florida. It's the Bob Lasseter Show, starring that mad dog character, whatever you call it, they're mad dogs, and featuring everybody's favorite board op, Flounder. I don't know about that. Jeez. Along with Ron Cart Richards in the newsroom and Stan the voice guy, and now Bob Lasseter.
8 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock. Welcome back, fun seekers. It is a Thursday night, September the 12th, 1996. Anyway, WPLP, the best of times, the worst of times. It was a pig of a radio station. It was owned by the same company that owned WINZ in Miami, but for whatever reason, they got caught with what is known in the business as a standalone AM. In other words, they didn't have an FM station. And it had a lousy signal, and it had never been successful. It had been through numerous format changes. It really didn't have any identification. And the company that owned it, even though they were, you know, decent people and all that kind of good stuff, they just didn't really want to put any money into it, and they didn't know what in the hell they were going to do with it, and so it just kind of existed. And it was a talk station. It was the second talk station in the market behind WFLA. And no matter what they tried, they just simply could not beat WFLA. Not that FLA was so good back in those days, it's just that PLP was worse. Much worse. And it was a strange collection of characters that worked inside that building. The people on the air were basically elderly, as were the callers and the audience. The people off the air were young kids with stars in their eyes. They were going to do things. They were going to go places. They wanted to be in show business. They wanted to be in radio. And they worked day and night like slaves for virtually nothing. And they lived together and they ate together and they had sex together and they partied together. They all made about the same amount of money. The only people that made any money at the radio station were the general manager, the bookkeeper, and the program director slash news director, who is now the news Buddha here. And they didn't make that much. We made a hell of a lot less. I did my best work at that radio station because I frankly didn't care. I mean, you don't sweat an $18,000 a year job, for God's sake. So you do whatever the hell you want to do. And they let me do whatever the hell I wanted to do. Unfortunately, the people that ran the radio station, the people that owned the radio station, weren't the best business people in the world, so it was always a financial struggle, to put it mildly. But we had fun. We had a hell of a lot of fun. Those kids were great kids to work with. Enjoyed the hell out of it. And that news director slash program director had a real talent for saying something to me right before I went on the air that would trigger something in my mind. And I would take his idea and make a show out of it. The business was much more innocent in those days. The audience was much more innocent in those days. And you could pull stuff like, you just couldn't believe. But people would believe. And we had a hell of a lot of fun. But what the hell, business is business. And WFLA started to fall on hard times. They went through a number of ownership changes. They were all broadcasters that bought and sold the station, but they weren't good business people, and things weren't looking terribly good over here, but there was that wild and crazy kid on at night over at PLP. What the hell, let's hire him and see what happens. And so they brought me over here. And the first year that I worked here, the station was owned by a company named Sconix. Half broadcasters, half speculators. It wasn't fun to work here. It wasn't even close to fun to work here because there was just always tremendous pressure and uncertainty. And the second year that I worked here, the station was owned by a company named J-Core. Hey, talk about broadcasters. These guys were nuts. These guys were great. And they had success, so they had a couple of bucks in their pocket. And they had this wild and crazy national program director, a man named Randy Michaels. And Randy, I tell you, man, he was just great. And basically all he did is he wandered from station to station to station that this company owned. And some of them were country stations, and some of them were talk stations, and some of them were, rock and roll stations. And it didn't make any difference because this guy was a broadcaster's broadcaster. And, oh, man, talk about somebody that would push the envelope. Ho! He wouldn't push it. He'd rip it up and throw it in your face!
He'd come on there and use the F word.
He would come to town and encourage you to be as wild and crazy as you could possibly be. And it was fun to work here. And they started to pay me some money. And I started to get some recognition. And there were some other people that offered to pay me more money, and so I left. And I went to work for the big company, for the gigantic broadcasting company, for the network. It wasn't fun. It was agony. They paid me more money than I ever thought I'd see in my entire life. And they also thought that they owned me. There was a price to pay for the big bucks. Strangely enough, they were broadcasters too. Believe it or not, they had just gotten so big and with so many layers of management and with so many rules and so many manuals and so many this and so many that's. And the broadcasters that started that company got bigger and bigger and bigger and more important and more important and more important. And so they started to hire people to replace themselves who weren't really broadcasters. They're frickin' yuppies. Who didn't dream of great radio, they dreamed of great corporate careers and stock options. And they didn't really care very much about radio. And they didn't really care very much about the people that worked in radio. And after 2.5 years of agony, 2.5 years of open warfare, it became painfully apparent to me that the station was not going to succeed as a talk station. I had been the first person hired. They had been more generous with me than anyone else. And I had a bitch of a contract. An absolute miserable bitch of a contract with one teeny weeny little window in it. And if they had picked up that option, they were committed to me for another 2.5 years, no matter what, for even bigger dollars. Well, I'm a reasonably practical man, and I knew that there was no way in hell, just absolutely no way in hell, that when my contract was up, the whole damn station was up. It was clear as a bell. It was another 5 months to go. And I came in one day, it was a Thursday afternoon, and I had to go through these ceremonial ritual every day, 1 hour pre-show meetings with the program director, where normally he would sit there and tell war stories. And I had to sit there and listen to them. But if you want to make that kind of money, that's the kind of crap you have to do. And every now and then I would explode and could take it no more. And he'd get up and storm out of his office, and he would come to the door and holler things like, "The meeting's not over yet, you come back here." And I would look over my shoulder as I was walking down the hall saying, "The hell it ain't over." And of course, there was nothing he could do about it. Well, this particular day, "The meeting's not over yet. You come back here." "The hell it's not over. If you don't come back here, we might not pick up your contract option." I stopped dead in my heels. I turned around and I said, "What kind of an asshole do you think I am? You pick up my contract option, you have obligated yourself for over $1 million. You think I'm stupid enough to believe you guys are going to do that?" He turned white. Because I was right. And they didn't think I was smart enough to have figured that out. They thought they could hold that window over my head for the next 5 months. I mean, we had gotten to the point of that radio station. When I say open warfare, I mean open warfare. They tried to make my life miserable. I told this story. This story is in the article. They forbid me to say that I was born in Philadelphia, that I had ever lived or worked any place other than Chicago. Under pain of suspension, which they could have done under the terms of that contract, where they could have literally kept me from working any place for the rest of my life. If I said, "Hi, I'm Bob Lasseter. I was born in Collingswood, New Jersey, and I used to work at WFLA in Tampa." I wasn't allowed to say that. But I'm a hell of a lot smarter than some freaking yuppie corporate ladder climber. So whenever the topic would come up and a caller would say something like, "Bob, You used to work in Tampa, didn't you? And I would respond, can't say as I did. Oh, no, but no, you're the Bob Lasser. You were WFLA in Tampa. You did Afternoon Drive, right? WFLA in Tampa? Can't say as I've ever worked there. This drove capital cities crazy. Absolutely crazy. Of course, it also drove the callers crazy. And the more I would say, can't say as I was ever born in Philadelphia, can't say as I ever worked in Tampa, or whatever it might be, the callers would become incredibly perplexed, and they would just go on and on. I know you were. I went to that shuffleboard. Remember you did that shuffleboard show in Tampa? Shuffleboard show? Can't say as I've ever done a shuffleboard show in Tampa, sir. We finally parted ways. When we did, I had decided that I had had all that I cared to have in this business. My life had changed dramatically. I came to Tampa with everything I owned in the back seat of a Volvo. It was 5 months behind in the payments. And by the time I left LS in Chicago, I didn't have to work again for the rest of my life. And I decided that I wasn't going to ever work again in this business. Ever, ever, ever. But that was it. That it was finally time to grow up and do something else with my life. I was now well into my 40s. Well, down the street from WLS was another radio station, WCKG-FM. It was owned by Cox Broadcasting. The general manager was a man named Mark Morgan, who was also a big mucky-mucky in Cox Broadcasting, and he oversaw a number of other stations that they had, including KFI in Los Angeles. My wife worked for CKG as a part-time accounting person. And so he went to her and he said, do you think Bob would be interested in going to KFI in Los Angeles? And she said, Mark, he's a pretty bitter man. I doubt it very much. He said, we'll make it worth his while. Oh. So I thought about it, and I went out and I talked to the people at KFI in Los Angeles, and it wasn't going to work out. And so I moved to Iowa. One day, while sitting in Iowa, the phone rang, and it was a young man who was the program director of the local talk station, WOC, which is a radio station owned by broadcasters. This young man used to work with my wife when she worked in Iowa. And that's how he knew that we were in town, and it's how he was able to get our phone number. And so he asked me out to breakfast one day, and he offered me a job. $12,000 a year. $12,000 a year. We're talking 5-6 years ago. I declined. I went home that day, and I said to my wife, I don't know why I went to lunch or breakfast with that guy. I want nothing to do with this business. This business isn't fun anymore. It's not fun anymore. I'd come full circle because my first offer at WPLP was for $12,000 a year. And I officially retired from broadcasting in my own mind. I never picked up the phone. I never asked anybody for work. I never sent out a tape. I never sent out a resume. And I was prepared to live the rest of my life in Davenport, Iowa, where I was perfectly happy getting up every morning and filling up my bird feeders. And then moving downstairs into my little basement office and slugging it out with the traders for the Japanese yen or the Swiss franc or corn or the S&P 500. You can get the latest from Persian Gulf on the Friday edition of AM Tampa Bay, 5 to 9, right here at News Radio 970 WFLA. So what does all of this have to do with WSUN? A lot. A lot. I had just spent 6.5 years of my life getting up virtually every morning and ripping through a newspaper and trying to find something to talk about, trying to find something to incite an audience with. 6.5 years of my life of calling people's grandmothers subhuman pigs. 6.5 years of arguing with people, 6.5 years of insulting people. I am a human being. I'm a very shy, reserved, quiet, polite man. And I had had it. I was totally burned out. I was perfectly happy to live in Iowa. I had just spent the last 2.5 years locked up in high-rise buildings where I rarely left the building. Most days, I never set foot outside. I would come down from my apartment into the garage. I would drive 6 floors down, drive approximately 1.5 miles to the radio station, drive 10 floors up to my parking space, go from there directly into the radio station, come back out, drive 10 floors down, 1.5 miles back to my apartment building, 6 floors up, leave my car, get in the elevator, and go back up to my apartment. I rarely set foot outside. In Iowa, I started to live again. I read the newspaper every day, but I read the stuff in it that I wanted to read. I read about my fillies. I read about gossip. I never read any more columns. I never read any more editorials. I never read any more letters to the editor. And I started going outside. Outside. And I got into this birdie watching thing, and I got into riding my bicycle and all kinds of stuff. And I was enjoying the hell out of life. I wasn't making any money, but I wasn't spending much. And I was enjoying it. It was kind of neat. I had just moved out of this incredibly fancy schmancy apartment in Chicago, and I was now living in a very simple, very humble 3-bedroom, 1-bath house in Davenport, Iowa, worth about $60,000, and loved it. It was a beautiful little place. I had a great backyard, and I cut my own grass. And the phone rang one day. Phone hadn't rang for a long time. Phone never rang. It was a man named Bob Neal from Cox Broadcasting. And he said, would you consider coming back into the business? And I said, I might consider it, Bob. I'm not really looking forward to it. I'll be honest with you. What did you have in mind? And he told me about this idea that they had, this really neat idea. WSUN, grand old lady of broadcasting that had fallen on hard times, and they were going to do this, and they were going to do that, and they were going to do the other thing, and I thought to myself, I don't really like Tampa. God, I'd love to bury FLA. I'd like to be part of burying those bastards. I mean, I worked my butt off for them, and they said really nasty things after I left there. Yeah, we can talk about this, Bob. We can talk about this. But, of course, I've reached a point in this business where I don't talk to the people. Now I have agents and lawyers, and they have representatives, and so we exchanged phone numbers for our various different representatives. 5 months would go by before the deal was cut, before I came back to Tampa, before I met Todd Leeser, and before I sat down behind the microphone and said, "Hi, Tampa, you're on the air at WSUN. The time, about 28 minutes away from the hour of 9 o'clock. I remember that first day at WSUN very, very well. It should have really been the tip-off as to what was going to happen. You see, when you start a new job in this business and you're in my end of the business, there's always this incredible honeymoon. They love you, you love them, everybody hugs everybody else. Life is just going to be grand, and we all know that it's going to end in a bitter, bitter, bitter dispute one way or the other. And that somebody's going to be very unhappy when it's over. But that first day, that first week, that first month, it's always just a beautiful, beautiful situation. Peace, love, and so forth and so on. But there was a very, very bad sign that very first day. It's not like I was replacing anyone. It's not like it was when I came into town and poor old Harry Cuff, I think it was his name, or Cup or something like that, was doing his last show reading the magazine poll. And I was out there listening. The bad sign was they didn't tell anybody at the station I was coming. And they had me show up at like 9:30, and I was immediately whisked into the general manager's office, and the door was immediately shut, where I was to be held until 10 o'clock when the official press release would be handed out to the press as well as the people that worked there. And I would be walked down the hall ceremoniously into the studio where Neil Rogers was going to do his show. It would normally have been done in Miami, but he was up here for this very, very special occasion, for this very big announcement. The reason I'm telling you all of this is because I am a human being, and everybody that works in this business is a human being. Now, I also happen to be on the air, and so therefore I have a persona, and I'm not here to make you love me. My name is not Jack Harris. I don't care if you like me or not. I'm not trying to sell you my jams and jellies or get you to watch my television show. I'm just here to get you to listen to my radio show, and I don't care if you like me. I have one thing going for me that almost no one else in this business has for them, and that is the balls to be honest with you about myself. You know more about me than you probably know about your spouse, unless you happen to have a better-than-average marriage. You know about my shortcomings, you know about my flaws, you know about my blemishes, you know about my fears, you know about my failures, you know about my triumphs. Because I'm able to tell you, I don't do so because I'm a nice man or a decent man. I do so because it works for me. And there are also an awful lot of things about me that you don't know. But one of the things that I have been able to pull off in this business is a relationship with an audience. Unlike most any of my colleagues. That's why they brought me back to WSUN. Because in this town, I am talk radio. Well, that's not very humble. And I don't give a crap. I happen to be very proud of it. I changed talk radio in this town. It's the only thing I've ever accomplished in my entire life. But I'm proud of it. And so they brought me back. And things were going to be great. But like I said, there was that little sign that first day. All those other people that worked at that radio station, all loyal, devoted employees, weren't considered trustworthy enough to know 1 minute before that they were bringing me back. Well, never mind. Then there was something else that I noticed. It was a facility not quite as nice as WGBS. The artwork wasn't as expensive, but it was a very, very nice facility. And it was owned by two of the wealthiest women on the face of this planet. And they were paying me a hell of a lot of money. They were paying a couple of other people in that building a hell of a lot of money. And then it dawned on me that almost all of the off-air programming people were part-timers. They all worked less than 30 hours a week so that they wouldn't have to be paid regular wages. So that they wouldn't have to be part of the profit-sharing program, so that they wouldn't have to be on the insurance program, so that they wouldn't have to cost as much. Decent young people with stars in their eyes. Not terribly unlike the kids I started with at WPLP. None of them had health insurance. None of them had anything. There wasn't any place to go. This big company owned by these filthy rich women wouldn't pay these people a living wage. Wouldn't share in the profits with them. Wouldn't even allow them to buy into the life insurance program. Nothing. Oh, well. And then they kept cutting back and cutting back and cutting back. And a board operator would get up to $7 an hour, and pretty soon he was replaced with a $5 an hour board operator. Constant turnover. Oh, well. Life's a bitch, isn't it? Yeah, it sure is. But hey, what the hell? We were having a good time. Yes, indeed. And I was, you know, I made some headway. Didn't destroy FLA. But they knew I was here. But a dent in that Crown Jewel morning show. Never beat them. Never came close to beating them. But you could add up my numbers, and they fit exactly in the numbers that they had lost. I knew it. They knew it. It was fun. Yes. 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 That's what it's all about, baby. This is broadcasting. This is radio. This is dog eat dog. But I kept seeing things I didn't like. Cruel things. Absolutely, incredibly cruel things. They decided to blow out their traffic department and replace it with Metro or somebody. I don't even know who it was. Doesn't make any difference. So he blew them all out. Ha, ha, ha. No notice, no nothing. You pigs are out in the street. Die, dogs. I don't care about your mortgage. I don't care about your car payment. I don't care about nothing. We're cutting, baby. The sisters need a new trip to Paris. And then I'm not really sure of the details, but for some reason there was some kind of a mix-up, a mess-up, and do you know they had the balls to ask one of those people to come back and do traffic? He told them to go screw themselves. They thought that he was ungrateful. Things just kept happening and happening and happening. Well, to make a long story short, just about a year ago, same thing happened that happened at WLS. I sat down and I looked at the station. I went in one day and picked up the log in the control room and I looked it over and it just didn't make any sense. It just didn't make any economic sense. And I had a contract window coming up in December, right before Christmas. And so I went to these people and I said, look, I'm a big boy. Been around a long time. I can count spots and multiply them by the spot rate, and I know what I cost, and I know what some other things cost. And it doesn't make any economic sense. And I'm very happy here, and I was. And I'd like to continue here, but if it's not to be, it's not to be. No problem. But at my stage in this game, it takes a long, long time to get a gig. I said, if you guys will remember, it was 5 months between the first phone call from Bob Neal and the last phone call from Todd Leeser saying, okay, it's a done deal. You start February the 1st. And I said, yeah, it did take 5 months. That's right. And I said, so look, if you're not going to renew my contract, no problem, no hard feelings, at least allow me to talk to other people. Oh. We'll get back to you on that. It was just about a year ago. About a week before my 50th birthday. About a week after my 25th anniversary in this business. A week went by. 2 weeks went by. 3 weeks went by. And so I came back and again I said, remember I asked a question? We haven't decided yet. We'll get back to you on that. A couple of more weeks went by. I went back to them and I said, remember I asked a question? We haven't decided on that yet. And now I'm getting a little testy. And I said, aren't you ashamed of that? For all practical purposes, for the remainder of the time that I was there, I never saw anybody. All of a sudden, every day when I came, would come in about 12:30, between 12:30 and 1 o'clock to pick up my mail because the offices were in one building, the studios in another. Every day after that, nobody was there. They deliberately left the building to avoid me. Deliberately left the building to avoid me. interesting. Thanksgiving came. I had the day off, and I took the day after Thanksgiving off. I came into work on Monday. That Friday was December the 1st. That was the do-it-or-get-off-the-pot day. For the first time in weeks, Tom Palavita, the operations manager, was there. By the way, guys, remember how you remember how you loved it? On my first day at WSUN, when I told the whole story, the truth, about what happened at WFLA, remember how you loved that? Oh, you're going to love the next 15 minutes here. Monday, it's the Nationwide Insurance Charity Golf Classic benefiting Easter Seals. You can golf at the Pasadena Yacht and Country Club and the 1 o'clock shotgun start for $100 registration fee. You'll get lunch and dinner, a golf shirt, and lots of other goodies. Plus, 970 WFLA's Jack Harris will be there. Call 988-7633 for more information from TSI of Florida, ABC 28 Tampa Bay, and 970 WFLA. I don't regret one minute of the time that I spent at WSUN. There are a lot of very, very good times. There are a lot of very memorable days, too. The most memorable day was a bone-chilling day. The kind of day that you remember for the rest of your life. We had, while I was there, we had swapped radio stations with CBS. They got one in Texas, and we got 95YNF. Which was kind of a trophy station at one time in this market, home of Ron and Ron, home of Russ Albums, home of a lot of other people. A lot of people probably listening to me right now who grew up listening to that radio station that have very special, very dear, fond memories. Radio is an incredible medium, unlike almost any other, where you have a bond, you form a bond with your audience, and it doesn't really make any difference what the format is. If the person behind the microphone is good enough, and the times are right in your life, there's a bond, a very special, magical bond. And there's kind of an implied, I'll be here for you whenever you need me relationship that you have with the audience. And then one day, and it doesn't again make any difference what the format is, what the station is, what the times are, one day, that implied promise to be there for you forever and ever is broken. Coldly, harshly, cruelly, without warning. We took over WINF, the bond that they had formed with their audience was broken without warning. Everybody that worked at YNF was fired. Not because they had done bad work, but because we could run the station without them. We already had a bookkeeper. We already had a receptionist. We already had a sales staff. We already had a cheap in the box format. That could be run by people paid a couple of bucks an hour. You didn't have to be Russ Albums. You didn't have to be Ron and Ron. All you had to do is say, Ghost! And play the same goddamned records over and over and over again. Well, there's kind of a long-standing, long-running joke with me and the people I work for, and sometimes we even let the audience in on it. It's the chair that I sit in. I sit in the chair for a long time. I got a big fat ass, okay? It's important to me that it be a comfortable chair. The chair in the studio at WSUN left much to be desired. It was, in essence, a stool. And so they said, well, look, go over to the old YNF studios and pick out any chair you want. Any chair you want. And you can have that one. And I said, okay. And so I went over and they unlocked the door and I stepped inside. And it was unbelievable. Here was this facility that had just a couple of weeks before been a vibrant radio station where close to 100 people had worked. Close to 100 people had worked there. And And there it was, absolutely empty of human beings. But the thing that was so strange, it's as though they had just left. It's as though they knew I was coming and had just all run out into the hall. Like they were playing some kind of a game or a joke. I mean, we're talking about, there were phone messages on the desks. There was unopened mail. There were still personal items. It's as though, I don't know, a spaceship had come and sucked them all up or something. It was the eeriest feeling I've ever known in my entire life. And I walked from office to office and cubicle to cubicle, testing out chairs and just standing there looking at this huge facility, 10, 12,000 square feet, whatever the hell it was, where people didn't work anymore, where sounds no longer were broadcast over the transmitter, where listeners no longer had any relationship with their friends at 95 YNF. It was really, really, really depressing. And I stood there and I looked around and I thought, God damn, this station used to be owned by one of the biggest corporations on the face of the earth. And it was taken over by two of the richest ladies on the face of the earth. And all those people, from the general manager down to the mailroom boy, gone. Gone. And all those people out there who used to listen to it, who grew up with it, who counted on it, listening to some moron say, "Ghost!" for $8 an hour. Something wrong here. Something awfully, awfully wrong. And that's happened hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times in virtually every city in this country. And it happens every day. And it's going to continue to happen every single day because of deregulation, where a whole bunch of rich speculators who aren't broadcasters, who aren't even human beings, got the Congress to pass laws allowing them to own as many radio stations as they can cram into their portfolio, allowing them to blow out as many employees as they can possibly blow out to run them as cheaply as possible, not in the public interest, not in anybody's interest but their own. It's a day I'll never forget as long as I live. I did find a comfortable chair. I don't know who used to sit in it before I did. I might have been the sales manager. I'm not sure. It was a pretty expensive one. Big high back. Was still in good shape. It's a chair I sat in to do my show. When they blew me out, Jeffy took it and broke it. Kind of glad that he did. Nobody else is sitting in it anymore. There were other days while I was there that I'll never forget. But that's the most significant. Until that Monday after Thanksgiving, I came in at my usual time. And I went to the mailbox, and standing right there waiting for me was Tom Palavita. I hadn't seen Tommy for a long time. He was the operations manager. Tommy Palavita is one of the most despised men in the radio business in Tampa, Florida. He shouldn't be. He's one of the nicest. He's a kind, sensitive young man who, unfortunately, is the hatchet man for Cox Broadcasting. He has very little authority, very little input to whatever goes on at those radio stations. But when a gutless general manager has an unpleasant job to do, or a spineless little punk like Bob Neal up in Atlanta has an unpleasant job to do, Tommy is the messenger who brings the bad news. And it makes him very uncomfortable. And so consequently, his demeanor, his attitude with the people that he has to give the bad news to is not as good as it ought to be. And the people that he has to give the bad news to don't understand what's going on, and so they blame him. And he's one of the most hated men in this business, in this market. People really dislike him. I have literally lost friendships. My wife has lost friends because I had the audacity to say, Tommy's not a bad guy. To people that Tommy had to deliver bad news to. And wouldn't ever talk to me again. Because I had the audacity to say, Tommy's not a bad guy. Well, there was Tommy standing by my mailbox. Clearly very upset. Before that day in the fall when I had asked about being able to talk to other radio stations, I used to visit Tommy almost every day. I'd go in and we'd sit down in his office for 10, 15, 20, or 30 minutes. He kept 25 or 30 jars of candy on his desk. Tommy's office was almost like going to a carnival. He's a Disney World freak. He has hundreds of figurines and pictures and trinkets and so forth and so on decorating his office, and these 25 or 30 jars of candy, different varieties of candy, they would keep on his desk. It's about the only way he could get people to come into his office. Most people that worked there were afraid of him or hated him. I didn't. I liked him very much, and he liked me. Tommy was one of those kids that kind of grew up listening to me. He was kind of excited when I came to work there. He was going to get to work with a mad dog. And I understood that. And I respected Tommy, and I liked him, as I said. And so he said, let's go into my office. I hadn't been in there for a long time, because Tommy was never there anymore. And he closed the door. And he said, Bob, to tell you the truth, I can't remember exactly what he said, not all of it, just some of it. So I'll paraphrase for a while. He said, Bob, I have bad news for you. We're making some changes here effective today. And it's nothing personal. It's a business decision. And this is where I will start quoting. I said, Tommy, that's okay. And his voice started to break. And he said, no, it's not. And I said, it's okay, Tommy. And I spent most of the rest of the time, 15, 20 minutes, consoling Tommy on the day that I was getting fired. Because a gutless man down the hall, who when I came in there got up and quickly closed his door. Todd Leeser didn't have the balls to do it. And made Tommy do it. When I went into Tommy's office, he got up and left the building. I don't know what he thought I was going to do to him. Oh, but more happened.
Live from Opie's Playhouse, this is the number one rated Bob Lasseter show. And that's according to Arbitron, not some lame local yuppie wannabe rag publication. Starring the magnificent Lasseter and featuring Flounder in the badly ventilated control room. How about some electrostatic filters in here? Jeez. Along with Big Daddy Don Richards swinging his groove thing in the news palace. And now hold on tight, kids, it might hurt. Mr. Lasseter!
6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, most of us have lost jobs in our lifetimes. Most of us have lost more than one job. And again, probably for most of us, most of those job losses have come when we were relatively young, when we didn't really even want to be working anyway, you know. It was kind of like somebody giving you a vacation. Hi, you're blowing me out of here. I don't have to flip burgers anymore. All right, thank you, boss. But things change as you grow older. Most of us have commitments and responsibilities and dreams, and the loss of a job is devastating, just absolutely devastating. More often than not, it comes without any warning. Although it can be argued that reasonable people would have seen it coming, and that's usually the case. Doesn't make any difference when it actually happens. That's devastating. Devastating. When you ask somebody what he is, he's likely to tell you, I'm a truck driver, I'm an accountant, I'm a physician, I'm a whatever. It's a rare individual that says, I'm a sensitive being with feelings. Because we are, in essence, what we do. That's the way we view ourselves. And so when you take a person's job from him, you have taken his identity from him. His purpose for living, usually, from him, as well as his security and all of those other things. And so I'm sitting there in Tommy's office, consoling him, as he's telling me that my security has just been yanked out from underneath me. And I said, well, of course you will honor the contract. It still had another 2 months to run. And he said, of course. And he said, we're going to run a tape of your show today. I would like you to leave the building. We haven't told Sharon yet. We haven't told Jeffy. And I don't even want them to see you. I'd like you to, you know, leave. And I said, I understand. And I said, can I go over to the studio and get my, you know, headphones and personal effects? And he said, no. I'll have somebody box them up and send them to you. I don't know what they thought I was going to do. I mean, don't you understand? Just the day before, I was part of the station, and everything was cool, and we were a team, and now they didn't trust me enough to go over and get my effects. Well, it wasn't really that they didn't trust me enough to go over and get my effects. I mean, we'd had a very good relationship up until that point. Todd was over there, and he didn't want to see me. They didn't know I knew that. That's why I wasn't allowed the dignity of going over to pick up my own things. Some of them are still there, by the way. The room looks almost like it did the last day I did my show. I've been in it a number of times now. I just left this stuff there. It's kind of like a memorial. And while I was still in Tommy's office, I said, Tommy, I have a non-compete. Is there anything you can do to get me out from underneath that? He said, it's going to be hard. I said, will you go to bat for me? He shook his head, yes. And then I stood up and I said, well, I guess I'll be on my way. And he looked out the door to make sure that neither Sharon nor Jeffy were in the vicinity so that they wouldn't see me. And then he escorted me to the front door and I walked out. He told me they would mail my paychecks to me. And that if I had any questions, I could call the business manager, Basil. Ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. And out the door I went. The Monday after Thanksgiving, I came home. Not really sure why, but Fast Eddie was there. He normally comes on Thursday. He's my lawnman. Lawnman to the stars, Fast Eddie. And so I couldn't even pull in the driveway. I had to park out in the street, and I just kind of whisked on by. It's 1:30 now. Fast Eddie knows that I go on the air at 2. Just kind of waved to him and disappeared inside. And I sat there. I picked up the phone and I called Ted Webb. And I told Teddy what had happened, knowing full well that he would tell somebody else and tell somebody else. And about a half hour later, the phone rang. It was Sue Trikas. Sue and I hadn't talked for years. Many, many years. Thought she hated me. She thought I hated her. She didn't want to make that call. You could tell. And I can't remember exactly what was said, but it was something to the effect of, if somebody would call you, would you talk to them? And I said, well, yeah. And there were a couple of other calls, and they were all pretty much basically the same thing. If somebody would call, would you take the call? And so I knew that there was a strong possibility, a fair possibility, that something might be worked out with WFLA, but I'm a wounded whale on the beach. Got to be real careful in situations like this. Don't want to, you know, give yourself up too cheaply, whatever. My wife came home that night. The WSUN Christmas party was scheduled for the next Friday, December the 8th. And we didn't want to go. I'm not into Christmas parties, office Christmas parties. They're more trouble than they're worth, to tell you the truth. And absolutely no good can come from them, and a great deal of bad can. And we had talked about it, and Mary had just gone out and bought a new dress for it that weekend. And so when she came in the house and she came out into the kitchen and put her stuff down on the counter, I said, well, I got some good news, honey, and I got some bad news. And she said, what? what's happened. And I said, well, the good news is we don't have to go to their goddamn Christmas party. And she let out a screech. And she started screaming, saying, oh, no, 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 oh, no. And she ran from the room. Mary is the farmer's daughter. Sensible woman. Thrifty. She's been in this business and around this business for a long, long time. But still, when things go wrong, it bothers her very, very much. I remember that night very well. See, that night wasn't necessary. Because if you'll remember, several months earlier I had asked, let's do this in a dignified adult way. And they wouldn't give me the answer, remember? I remember. I remember my wife sitting on the couch, screaming and holding her head, and just saying over and over and over again, oh no, oh no, oh no. See, in the 3 years that I've spent at WSUN, I had made many, many, many adjustments to my act. I first of all had to adjust to doing mornings when I'm not a morning man. And bitterly disappointed all the people that remembered me from when I was here before, who thought I was going to come back and do the liberal monologues. Well, you don't do liberal two-hour monologues at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then I had to learn to work between the Bunyan Brigade and the Psychic on one of the most appalling mishmashes of a station I've ever had the displeasure of being affiliated with. It was fun to work there. But I had pretty much destroyed myself. All the things that I was able to do well, I couldn't do there. It wasn't the kind of radio station. It wasn't the kind of audience. No longer was I hot and in demand. There wasn't any place for me to go. What, I was going to send somebody a tape of my squeak toy? And talking to Sharon about her Thanksgiving turkey? Wouldn't have played too well in Indianapolis. That's what was scaring Mary, and that's what was scaring me. I'd done everything for them, and they didn't have the decency to tell me it was over. And then the man that decided to pull the plug didn't have the decency to look me in the face and tell me. The next 2 months were hell. Mary went into an incredibly deep depression. And I went into an incredibly deep depression. I thought I'd never work again. Everything I'd worked for was now in jeopardy. There was no place to go. Oh, there were occasional contacts with the people over here. And it was always things like, well, Gabe will call you in about a week, and a week can come and go, and there was no Gabe. And I was too proud to call him. And Christmas came. And we decorated the house, and we bought each other presents. It wasn't quite as good a Christmas as usual, but it wasn't bad. But I couldn't take the Christmas tree down. Christmas tree normally goes up 1 week before Christmas and comes down exactly 1 week after, and not this year. I couldn't take it down. Do you know why? I was afraid it was my last Christmas. I was afraid it was my last Christmas in that house that I'd come to love. That I could not afford. And the day that we finally did take that tree down, I cried. For 30 goddamned hours, Todd. I cried. I was positive. I was taking down my Christmas tree for the last time. 3 weeks before Christmas, a week after, I got blown out at SUN. I invited Tommy out to lunch. We had a good lunch. at the end of it, I handed him a letter. I said, would you please give this to Todd? And in the letter it said, Todd, there are things in life that you don't always understand how important they are to you until they're no longer available to you. Something that has come to mean a great deal to me, it's a silly thing, is my Christmas show. I understand that I am under a non-compete, but would you give me permission to do that show on another radio station? I will not accept any money for it, but I would like to do my Christmas show. Time is of the essence. Could you please get back to me as soon as possible? A day went by, 3 days, a week, 2 weeks. He never got back to me. Todd has a fax machine sitting on his desk, and I had the phone number. I wrote him one of the most brutal one-paragraph notes that you can begin to imagine. I have a copy of it. I should have brought it in tonight. I have to just kind of remember what it said. But it was devastating. It said, in essence, Todd, I'm 50 years old. I'm out of work and I'm scared. I asked you if I could do my Christmas show and you didn't have the decency to respond. What did I ever do to you to deserve this? And I said it. It was about 9:30 in the morning. And I sat there, expecting the phone to ring. It didn't. At about 5:15 that afternoon, the phone did ring, and I picked it up, and it was Tommy Pallavita. I can't say for sure. Can't say for sure, but I kind of suspected that there was somebody standing next to him. Tom said that he was calling on behalf of Todd, and that they would not be able to give me permission to do the Christmas show. Because, hey, business is business. Unless I wanted to forfeit the remainder of my pay, which was something in the neighborhood of $25,000. This is a couple of days before Christmas. I wasn't happy about. Wasn't happy about the fact that gutless bastard Todd Leeser didn't have the balls to call me and tell me that, but made some poor man who had no say whatsoever in the decision do it. And I did something I'm not proud of. I gave Tommy a hell of a lot of grief because I suspected that Todd was listening. It was a very uncomfortable phone call for Tommy. Very uncomfortable, and I regret it because he's a decent man. I haven't talked to him since. It's the last contact I had with him. Until my first day here when they sent me flowers. You assholes. So the purpose for telling you all of this? I'll get to it in a second. The time. So the boy genius of programming up in Atlanta, Bob Neal, and the boy wonder on the fast track down here, Todd Leeser, destroy the worm by taking it off of one frequency and putting it on another. What is their response? They blow out the midday man and the afternoon drive man. Just fire them. Must be their fault. Bob and Todd drive bigger cars and live in nicer houses now. The coast starts to fall apart. They blow out the morning man. Must be his fault. S-U-N. God, this is really trashy. Let's blow everybody out. It was their idea, not the people that were doing it. During the time that I was there, I saw dozens of people blown out. Sacrifices to the stupidity, the incompetence, and the lack of decency and honor on the part of Bob Neal and Todd Leeser. Since I've gone, dozens more. And yesterday, WFNS, gone. What remained of WSUN, gone. If you tune into WFNS, you will hear the coast being simulcast. If you tune into WSUN, from 2 o'clock in the afternoon until 6 o'clock the following morning, you will hear the worm being simulcast. And as soon as they can get out of the Nancy Donnellan Sports Babe contract, you will hear that, also with the worm on it. And at the end of December, when the Ron and Ron contract is up, they will be gone. These two boy wonders of broadcasting have destroyed four radio stations. And I can't tell you how many lives. And so yesterday, a whole bunch of decent, dedicated people who ain't done nothing wrong except try to do their jobs under, frankly, less than ideal circumstances, showed up for work to find out there wasn't any more work. And in the newspaper this morning was Todd Leeser quoted about what great people they were. Now it was a business decision. Only business. You understand, it's only business. I wonder if he hid from them as well as he hid from me. I wonder if he's going to ignore their pleas to be let out of their non-competes as he ignored mine. I wonder if he's going to call up people and try to get some of the latest gossip as he called up people that knew me to try to get some gossip. He'd love to know how much I earn here. Pump the hell out of my agent for information. Gossip. Gossip. From a cowardly little bastard who still has his job. And his boss who still has his job. When scores and scores and scores of decent people don't have theirs because of their incompetence. Because of their lack of honor. It pisses me off. Pisses me off big time. I don't know any of the people that got blown out yesterday. Never met any of them. Two of them I've said very uncomplimentary things about. If I could remember their names, I would have said more, but I can't remember their names. And those two have said very uncomplimentary things about me on their shows. That's the nature of the business. Opie Dopey, Freakus, the Blobster. It's the nature of the business. It's not personal. I never met the two guys who replaced me with a sports talk show in the afternoon. And I never listened to it because I can't stand sports talk. It has nothing to do with how good or how bad it is. The stations were not overly successful, but a certain segment of the audience, 2-3%, listened to them. And to them, it was a very special radio station. And to them, right up to the last minute, they were lied to. We'll be here when you need us. We're your buddies. We're your friends. Ghost! Because Bob Neal and Todd Leeser are indicative of most of the people who run this business now. They're not broadcasters. I wonder if they're even human beings. They couldn't care less about the people that listen to them. They couldn't care less about the people that advertise with them. They couldn't care less about the people that work for them. They're all plug-in disposable modules. And they go home every night in their fine cars to their fine homes. Well, I suppose that of all the salespeople, the programming people, and the on-air people that got blown out yesterday, I suppose there's a pretty good chance that a couple of wives screamed and ran from the room, "Oh, no, oh, no, oh, no." And I suppose that some of them will have a very difficult time putting up the Christmas tree and taking it down this year for fear that it may be the last time. And I suppose that some of them will go through very deep, dark depressions and have the kinds of thoughts that ran through my mind and ran through my wife's mind. And I suppose there will be heartless faxes and letters and phone calls unreturned from desperate people begging for a little favor, a favor that doesn't cost anything, like, "Please let me go back to work. There's somebody that might want to hire me, please. Not because they can do any damage to the great Cox Broadcasting Company. Not because they can do any damage to Todd Leeser. Not because they can do any damage to Bob Neal. But because Bob Neal and Todd Leeser can do it. There's a reason why I've drugged this story out to almost 3 hours tonight. There's a reason why I gave you almost an hour and a half of fill. That reason? I wanted to make damn sure that somebody got an opportunity to get to Todd and say, oh boy, this is what we've been waiting for. He's going to unload. I've waited 5.5 months. Because I knew that you were sitting there last April waiting. And I deliberately said nothing about you. I deliberately said nothing about what went on there. Frankly, it wasn't anybody's business. And frankly, it was still much, much too painful for me. It's still pretty damn painful for me. But when I heard last night what you did to FNS and to SUN, and then when I saw the paper this morning, I figured, No. This man spent 4 years in this town doing virtually nothing but firing people for his own and his boss's incompetence? No. So I'll come in and I'll tease a little bit. And I'll sit here and I'll fill some time. And now you, you son of a bitch, can sit there and listen to it. And you can squirm. And I hope that your wife is listening, too. I understand she was a very big fan of WSUN's. I'm even told that you discussed it with her. How you had to blow all those people out right before Christmas. And how she at least felt bad about it. So unless I've missed my guess, and I rarely do, this is what I do best. It's called Radio for One, Todd. Radio for One. You enjoyed it ever so much when I was under your employ. You enjoying it tonight? Well, I don't think any of those people that you blew out yesterday are feeling too good tonight either. They didn't do anything wrong. They deserved dignity. They deserved respect, just as all of the other people that you people blew out because of your own incompetence. Not theirs, yours. You and your mentor in Atlanta are detriments to this industry. You and your mentor in Atlanta and your counterparts and all over this country, in this industry and virtually every other industry, are directly responsible for the moods and the attitudes that many, many, many workers have today. You worship at the feet of two of the wealthiest women on the face of the earth and sacrifice helpless little slobs for the benefit of the two wealthy women in the hopes that they will frown, or excuse me, that they will smile upon you. Todd, if someday after a very unpleasant situation, when you are sacrificed by the boy wonder of programming in Atlanta to save his ass, don't be surprised if you receive a bouquet of flowers with a card unsigned that simply says all good things must come to an end. I understand business, Todd. I understand it all too well. Better than I wish that I did. I don't understand cowardice. I don't understand dishonor. I don't understand it at all. I don't understand picking up the newspaper for countless times and finding you're trying to put the best spin on your own failures. I just don't understand it. pleasant it would be to pick up the newspaper in the morning and see, I feel so terrible about this. What in the hell were we thinking of when we put on two goddamn sports stations in a town that already had one that was failing? Why did we jerk with those people's lives? God, I feel bad about this. Instead of that phony plastic salesman smile. I don't know any of those people that got blown out yesterday, Todd. None of them. I feel so goddamn bad for them, I can't see straight. Some of them will never work in this business again. It was their dream. None of them were great people. None of them were fantastic people. None of them were stars. They were just human beings who did nothing but come in every day and work as hard as they possibly could. They were jerked around from day one. They were toyed with from day one. They were lied to from day one. And they were disposed without dignity. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. It was 26 years and 11 days ago I first sat behind a microphone in St. Thomas, the Virgin Islands, and I have no idea what my first words were. I never expected it to last. It was a gig. I desperately needed a gig. It didn't make any difference to me if it was at a car rental agency or a radio station or a drugstore. I couldn't have cared less. I just needed a gig. I was out of money. And I never expected it to last. And the 26 years and 11 days have been filled with some of the best times you can imagine. There have been highs like most people will never know. There have been lows like most people will never know. And most of the days were like the days that everybody else knows, just somewhere in between. And it's just become a job. It's nothing special. It's relatively easy to do most days. Some days it's hard. Most days I look forward to it. Some days I don't. It's a job. And I started out as a very young man, and I am no longer a young man. I don't know what else I could do now. I don't know what else I would have done had I not stumbled into this business. I'm very glad that I did. I'm very grateful that I did. I owe everything I have to it. I've had incredible luck. Sometimes the luck was being at the right place at the right time. Sometimes the luck was being heard by the right person at the right time. Sometimes the luck was just being in the right market at the right time. And somehow it all came together and has been very, very kind to me. And from time to time, it's actually what got me thinking about this, I get a call from some kid that also dreams, would like to be the man on the radio. Because radio is so very, very special. It's one of the reasons I'm back working at night, because it's even more special at night. And a couple of nights ago, I got this call from this kid who wanted some advice about how to get into the business. Happens a half a dozen, maybe a dozen times a year. And you sit back and you take the questions very seriously. Because the person has exposed their dreams to you, the man on the radio, and you try to give them the best possible advice that you can without being too discouraging, not being too encouraging. Because it's not the same business that it was that I got into it 26 years ago. It's not even close. And it's changing every day still. And the changes are not for the better. It is a business now run by speculators, very, very few broadcasters. Why, my God, even at this radio station, at this company, remember that guy that I talked about, that programming genius? He doesn't program anymore. He speculates on radio stations now. Oh, well. It's still a better company than most. It's still owned and run primarily by broadcasters. Not too many of them are anymore. Not too many of them are. There are hundreds, literally hundreds fewer people employed in broadcasting in Tampa Bay today than there were when I sat down here for the first time about 12 years ago. Hundreds fewer. there are fewer radio stations than there were when I sat down 12 years ago. When I sat down, there were three or four dominant AM stations. Now there's one. Fewer and fewer reasons for people to tune into the AM dial and stumble upon us. My God, why must you go to the AM dial to hear the coast? Or warm? Or any of the other stations that simulcast, wasting AM signals? Not much reason to. Because nobody fights anymore for the survival of the business. Nobody really gives a crap about the people listening. Nobody keeps the promises that we make every day. We're your buddy. We're your friend. You can count on us. Until we decide to pull the plug and leave you and everybody else behind in the dust. It is a business, and it must be run as a business, because if it isn't, then, well, everybody's out of work. But there's got to be something better. There's got to be a better way to do it. We have destroyed it. We have destroyed this industry. I don't know how much longer it's going to survive. At some point, there will be four or five morning shows. Maybe a dozen afternoon shows. A couple of syndicated midday shows. Some kid reading a dime novel at the control board, flipping the switch when the satellite signal comes in and when it goes out. Handful of salespeople waiting for the gig down at the Oldsmobile dealership to open up. A bookkeeper and Todd Leeser presiding over it all. Baron of broadcasting. The audience grows smaller every year. Did you know that? It's not quite as bad as television. Television's audience grows smaller every year, too, but the radio audience grows smaller every year because more and more people, I guess, are catching on, maybe not even consciously catching on, that we're not your friends. We're not your buddies. We're not part of your community. We're whores. Yeah, we'll give you all the latest sports information today and talk to you about it. Unless we think that we can sell you a, I don't know, medical show tomorrow.
Hello, doctor. Doctor, there's pain in my side. What do you think it could be, doctor?
I'm not that kind of a doctor. I'm a shrink out of KFI in Los Angeles.
I know, doctor, but I got this pain in my side. What do you think it could be?
Yep. That's what it's come down to. That's what it's come down to. And it's a real shame, damn it, it's a real, real shame, because it is such an incredibly powerful medium. I just talked to you for 3 hours, off the top of my head. I really hadn't even planned on doing this tonight. Got notes here. Where the hell is somebody supposed to learn to go to talk to you for 3 hours? And actually say something? Where the hell are you supposed to go to learn to do that now? S-U-N? FNS?
The Coast!
Where the hell do you think you're going to find the next sucker to save your ass, Todd? Where do you think you're going to find the next Lassiter, the next Neil, the next Ron and Ron, the next sports babe? Where the hell do you think you're going to go to find him? You and your kind have eliminated all the training grounds. And on top of that, you virtually run through all of us. None of us would work for you again. And if we did, and we smiled, we'd be doing to you what you did to us all along. We'd be lying, baby, waiting for our chance to stab you in the back and to get even. If not for ourselves, then for all of the other people. Like all of those people that got blown out yesterday, that I don't even know. Well, there's still one guy left that can talk off the top of his head for 3 hours. still one guy left that knows the art of radio for one. Hope you feel really bad. I hope you feel really, really bad. I hope you're squirming. But you know what I hope even more than that, man? I hope that you'll go to bat the next time for the people that work for you to the point of putting your own job in jeopardy, saying, no, this isn't right. Let's try to fix it. This isn't right for the people that work here. This isn't right for the people that listen. This isn't right for the people that believed in us and helped us pay for this, the advertisers. It's not right for anybody. It's not right for the industry. It's not right for the country. Get the hell off the fast track, dude. Get the hell off the fast track. You ain't doing nothing for the industry. You ain't doing nothing for the community. You ain't doing nothing for the country. Except killing a golden goose. Bitterly disappointed in you. Bitterly disappointed in you. And all the other people like you in this business now. Why the hell don't you get out and, you know, open up a whorehouse or something? Something you're a little bit more, maybe better able to do. Must be somebody left who could learn how to be a broadcaster. And it also had balls and honor. Must be somebody left. Show's over.